Hello and welcome to the All Out Cricket Podblast. We are four men sat around the boundary of a table with a black sheet on it, as if it's been used for the magic circle previously.
Cue some kind of over-elaborate analogy to do with some cricket team at the time. Fill in the gaps, listener.
Yeah, you fill in that. We're looking out at the London skyline, at the wonderful Oval. Al, are you feeling good about life today? Are you feeling good about cricket?
Fantastic. I mean, the England team are in South Africa. They're overhyped, they're oversexed, and they're over there.
That's very good. Listen, let's stop this palaver. Let's introduce Henry Cowan.
Hello.
And Joe Harmon.
Hello. Good to see you guys. It's been a while.
It has been a while, Joe. How have you been?
I've been well. Been well.
Very good.
Yeah, not too bad. No travels. Better things to do.
Just too busy.
Yeah.
Someone told me you were travelling. It was to soften the blow that you just didn't care anymore, I think. And Alex, what do you want to talk? What do you want to start us off with?
I think we've got to start with England, South Africa, and the bombshell of AMLA. But during the course of today's episode, we've got a number of topics, and I want to begin with England, South Africa. But I don't think we can get through today's episode without talking about a couple of kids. Kid number one, Henry, may have a penchant for very large, round fruit.
He's my favourite of the two kids, the second of which we'll come on to in a moment.
Yeah.
But if you eat a whole watermelon, rind and all, then you're all right by me.
I don't think we knew that was possible. To eat the rind, I haven't tried it, but it's tough stuff.
For the two people left in the world who don't know what you're talking about, do you want to explain what you're talking about?
So it's a Big Bash game.
That's right. It's the 2020 stuff they do in Australia.
Yeah, that's correct.
Test cricket, but less fun.
That's correct.
Right, yeah.
Shorter, more dynamic. A 10-year-old kid took it upon himself to eat the entirety of a watermelon during a Big Bash game. And this was obviously picked up by the TV cameras. They kept coming back to him, seeing how he was progressing, which was very well, making excellent progress, particularly for a 10-year-old, not a big mouth.
Yeah.
He completed the challenge that he had set himself.
Yeah.
And then afterwards was quoted as saying, "I'm not really a hero, I'm just a normal average kid." That was Mitchell, age 10.
Which is true.
Yeah,
it's very true. Yeah.
It's good to keep your feet on the ground, isn't it?
Hashtag watermelon boy was going around for quite a while. I like that a lot. What I like is he said, "I went for that because I knew I'd get picked up by the cameras." He's an evil genius, that kid. How did he know that if he ate a big what, they'd just catch him?
I think actually it's quite a sad indictment of kids today. Because
in
the olden days, they'd been watching Test cricket, and they wouldn't think about the cameras.
Not a watermelon inside.
You'd watch the cricket, and maybe you'd have a yogurt.
Yeah,
fine.
Maybe.
But you wouldn't eat the pot?
No, you'd be playing with abacus or something like that. You'd be doing something oldie-worldie,
wouldn't
you?
There's also a concern that if he's onto this, that's how you get on TV. What are people going to do or eat to get on TV?
Yeah.
Will they be eating livestock?
And actually, why hasn't that been a...
That's
why
good.
Hasn't that been a Guardian think piece yet?
That's
the
true.
Watermelon boy is fine, but what happens next?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, he can't go bigger on the fruit or veg than the watermelon.
He can't eat any more watermelon.
He can't. So someone's got to beat that some way. And if it's living things, woe betide us.
I think during the course of this episode, I'm going to be eating my own words.
Oh!
That's the segue, people. But let's just come quickly on to the second kid we're going to be touching on during the course of this episode, which is, of course, the young batsman from India who scored over 1,000 runs. And as I reach for my phone to get his name right.
Yeah, that's
Pranav Danawadi, I believe.
Very good.
Well, there you are.
Very good.
So I've written here 1,000 runs, Pranav Danawadi, and watermelon. Yes, that's it.
How do we feel about this child? I don't understand why that piece of news reached me. Do you know what I mean? How did it get to me?
Or reached me on like 20 different occasions.
A lot of different occasions. I didn't realise that was the thing, like children doing things that were really impressive in sort of club
games. Are we still on the watermelon now?
Not on the watermelon. I know that's a thing, and I know how I feel about it.
Well,
I feel great. But I didn't... It's just sort of essentially a school match, is it? Or am
it's
I completely
fix,
wrong?
Isn't it? It's a fix.
It's a fix. It's
I don't want to kind of ride this
fantastic
achievement.
Fix.
First of all, if it's not a fix, I mean, who wants to play in a game like that? The bowling figures were kind of none for 300.
Yeah.
He's probably not playing cricket again, is he? Mm. So that's one person lost to cricket.
Yeah.
This guy's got 1,000.
Yep.
Also, I think they'd bowled them out for 30.
Yeah, they'd bowled them out for 30.
So they had plenty. He didn't need to
get
important
that.
Important to note as well. that I think the real criminals in this, and I use that word appropriately,
yeah, I think that,
in this case,
yeah.
Are the elders, the people who are in charge. Who's the teacher
who allowed
here?
It to happen? Yeah,
because in my old school days, when I was a child, if you were playing a rugby game and someone was winning too heavy, they called it off,
take him off,
finish it.
You retire at 50. Yeah. You don't let him get 1,000. And it's a sad indictment. They've let it get out of control.
And this youngster, who's clearly going to captain India and probably be the president, he was playing against the under-14s of the opposition.
Oh, right.
Because the under-15s weren't allowed to come because their headmaster of the opposing school said they've got to do their exams. So they sent the kids, literally the kids, to go and play these big boys, and they scored a thousand.
Everyone's talking about, quite right, Henry, everyone's talking about the victory. No one's talking about the bodies that have been caused by this story. The people will never play cricket again. The teachers who hopefully will be out of work.
Collateral damage.
The collateral damage.
Yeah. Well, you know, they're not the only young kids that were sent out to fight a bunch of big guys. We're going to come on to England, South Africa after small jazzy break.
Okay, England, South Africa. The first test, England only go and bloody win it. What did you make of it, Joe?
God, I wasn't expecting you to come to me that quickly.
No,
that's the shortest intro ever.
There you go. No puns. No pun, really puns. So it's going to be a shorter show.
Much shorter show. Well, I wasn't hugely surprised that England won the opening test. I didn't think South Africa were all that cracked up to be in the lead. It's an odd sight because they've got 3 or 4 of the very best players in the world. But then the rest of them, you think, they're not that much, really. They're not that all they're cracked up to be. Having said that, the manner in which England won, I didn't expect it to be quite so easy at that stage. But obviously, South Africa's bowling attack isn't the one we expected to be facing when we were talking about the series. No Philando's been ruled out for the whole thing. Steyn obviously wasn't himself at Durban. It's Cape Town. Looks unlikely for Johannesburg. And Abbott missed the last one as well. So England really needed to get that lead in the series, and now South Africa have come back quite strongly, and they go to Johannesburg where they've got a good record, particularly against England last time they hammered them there, and now it seems like the series is back on, having looked after day 2 of the second test, like England were going to romp it.
Well, at the end of the first test, I think the general consensus in the media was that South African cricket was basically done for.
That's right.
There was a piece in the Telegraph about, you know, it basically being the end of days.
Yeah, stop playing. Just pack up and stop playing.
Yeah, that was... give it up. Yeah. I saw Bavuma bat in the first test and thought he looked rubbish, eye for talent that I have.
I thought he batted nicely in the first innings when he saw out the day.
Yeah,
he looked quite comfortable. Obviously, he played a shocking shot in the second innings.
Right. But yeah.
I talked Bavuma down. I also talked to Plessis down before his 80-odd.
Yeah.
And Morris throughout the test.
Yes.
So
he said he couldn't catch.
Shouldn't be as slick. I don't know why he's playing. Basically, I think all of the South African team are rubbish, but I still predicted a 2-1 win to them.
Subsequently, you've said he's the best all-rounder in Test cricket.
He's the best all-rounder in Test cricket, bar Chris Jordan.
I actually think Chris Morris is quite a decent bowler. I saw him some while ago, and he looked excellent. I do think they have got quite good strength and depth in terms of their seam positions. But, well, it's not bad. I just think none of them get a chance.
They don't rotate very much.
Do you think they are?
They are bad.
I don't know. There is a lot of people like Morris who tend to be better regarded, get into places like the IPL around the world than the English second string do. And I think that's for some reason.
One day cricket, Morris is a handy player.
Yeah.
But in the test stuff, obviously a long way to go. But he looks nothing more than a fourth seamer to me, personally. Mm-hmm. And he was third seamer with a fairly run-of-the-mill spinner in the attack.
I was surprised they picked Carl Abbott in the first test. Once they knew that they had to replace Philander, I was really looking for it to be Rabada. And I thought that was a sign of conservatism that I could recognise from sort of England at a certain time in a period of decline. And that might still be the case with South Africa. I think I've got to pull the plaster off the wound now, don't I?
Yeah. Do it.
So we're going to do it. We're going to pull the plaster off the wound. Mm-hmm. At a certain time, at a certain date, mm-hmm. I may have suggested that Chris Jordan was a better pick as an all-rounder for England than Ben Stokes. what a load of Ben Stokes that clearly was. And, you know...
Are you going to apologise?
Yeah, what are you going to say about it?
I think it's done things that demand an apology.
Yeah, never concede, never apologise. Yeah. I don't know who said that. It was a historical figure who's probably involved in genocide. And but what I what I do know is I watched bits of the Stakes innings.
Yeah.
You don't need me to say how extraordinary it was. What I loved about it.
No, we do.
You don't know how much this is hurting me, guys. what I loved about it was range of shot.
Yep.
Absolute cleanliness of those shots, that precision stroke making. But then I really enjoyed that almost village level smashing of Van Zyl, or almost out of the ground. He was, I think, trying to see how far he could hit it out of the ground, which was beautiful. And then, of course, the poetry of the end of the innings through AB de Villiers. Do anyone else notice AB? He points at the stumps before he throws at them.
I like that.
Not a general direction of arm, but a point.
That's very old. That's very year eight, isn't it? It's very old school. I like it.
He also shouts in when he runs his bat as well.
Looking back.
having done my mea culpa, I think that the England cricket team is like an uneven Christmas tree. And Stokes is this gorgeous, big, shiny bauble on it, which is distracting everybody from the unevenness of the base and maybe the slight bare patches, particularly towards the top.
So you've come back to attack again, Al, haven't you?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right. I've made a concession only to regroup and then attack again. So if I can inject some kind of negativity into this, it has to be that I just think that the Stokes innings was a distraction from that unevenness. And it was a distraction that the press were happy to jump on because it was so much fun. But look, South Africa, a few days before, were apparently no good to anybody. England did the Stokes innings. Stokes is the next Sobers. And then suddenly, before you know it, they've scored 600 and it's a road. England stayed in the field in the second innings for the longest period of time since 2004. When Lara scored 400.
Since 99, it was longer than Lara.
Ooh,
really? It was longer than Lara.
Longer than Lara.
I was really proud of that stat, and it wasn't even right.
Since South Africa, since Kirsten, South Africa.
Wow. It's absolutely incredible. I mean, we'll never know how many more runs Chris Jordan could have scored. Maybe he would have got 1,000. But I would like to know where the unevenness in this team is you're pointing out. Is it purely the bowlers out? Is that the question?
No, actually, I think there's an incredible split personality England side with a relatively consistent set of bowlers. Three world-class seamers. Broad must be pushing, not the first day this thing, lots of people have said this, to Bell. Broad pushing greatness now, particularly the way he bowled in Pakistan. He's doing it on every kind of pitch now.
Yeah.
Anderson being Anderson, Finn just looking in the form of his life. A split personality to a batting lineup, which is not, I'm not suggesting for a moment, bad, but mercurial.
Mercurial, certainly.
Yeah.
But in terms of being out in the field for that long, though, you know, James Taylor can't do too much about that unless he comes on, like Alex Hales did with his weird bobbly bobblers.
Well, this is where we come on to catching. You know, bad day at the office, says Farbrace. The only people that ever say bad day at the office is anyone who works in an office. It's a really weird situation. You know, because you just kind of, the bad day at the office is, I understand, you can't rerun the catches, nobody wants to do it. But, you know, England probably bowled South Africa out almost twice.
Yeah, well, it was eight chances down in the end.
It was about 10, if you're being harsh. Some of them were, you know, harder than others and would maybe be classified as a half chance. But I think 10 was the figure I'd seen. A lot of chances dropped. Can I just quickly come back to Ben Stokes' innings?
Yes, why not?
I feel that,
well, the media jumped on.
I feel that your reaction to it, Alex, is uncharitable, to say the least.
Joyless.
A little bit Ebenezer Scrooge around Christmas time. That was one of the finest displays of Test cricket I've ever seen. And it was a joy to behold. And for you to take issue with the England team off the back of that innings, I find hard to take.
It's curmudgeonly. Yeah. You've out-curmudgeoned Boycott.
I'm not curmudgeoning Stokes. Stokes himself said after the innings that he feared for his place. And I thought, that's weird, Stokesy. I didn't notice you were fearing for your place. Then I read some stats. In his previous 10 innings, he'd averaged 12.9.
Yes.
In his previous 15 innings, he'd averaged 17.99. So in one innings, he scored the same amount of runs as the previous 15. Mm. This is a guy who's taken 15 wickets in 10 innings, of which 10 were in only two. Mm. So basically, he's taken 5 wickets in 8 other innings. So what I'm saying with Ben Stokes is, big shiny bauble, great, nice, tree's a bit uneven, all right?
I agree, but as we've stated before, Al, previously on the show many times, it takes two people to win a test match. It often takes one great innings by a batsman and one good bowling performance. He only needs to come off, you know, once in 5 or 10. He's sort of cricketer.
He came off this time. We didn't win.
We've said before, at the end of his career, he's not going to have a test batting average of 50. He's not going to have a test bowling average below 30. But he's going to be worth his place in the side. Hopefully he'll have a batting average touching 40 by the end of his career. And his bowling average will come down a bit, but not necessarily that much. If he's performing that role as effectively the fifth bowler, they don't need that much from him. He's shown that on his day, as he did in the Ashes, he can take wickets. But to expect consistency from him is ludicrous. In the same way that people who criticise him for playing attacking shots then shouldn't really be able to enjoy that when it comes off as much.
That's a weird sort of rule, isn't it?
Well, no, I think it is. Kevin Peterson said this subsequently as well. I mean, he got... shouted down for getting out playing aggressive shots, but then people loved it when it came off, and it's the same thing with Stokes. I mean, I saw people already bizarrely starting to criticise him for that shot that he played in the second innings. It didn't work. Obviously, it looked bad. He got caught on the boundary. If that comes off, then everyone says he's a brilliant player, and he should have been taking that on because they played so well in the first innings.
I think quite honestly, he's. That was an astonishing display of Test cricket. He's clearly capable of producing unbelievable things. And as Joe says, he's not going to average the same as a Root or maybe a Taylor will go on to do because of the way they play the game and the way he plays the game. But I think you'd have to be hard pressed to argue after that he doesn't deserve to be assassin.
No. But this is what I mean. He's the bauble on the tree. You've got a tree that isn't quite right. There's no point in having the bauble. So my criticism isn't of Stokes being the bauble. That's fine. I understand that.
It's a confusing metaphor.
Stokes is a luxury. What Stokes is not is the man who creates a successful England side.
That's a nonsense. He balances the team in the way that nobody else can. He produces runs and wickets. He enables fast bowlers to come in and bowl fewer overs at a quicker speed. He scores at a fair old lick when he's got the bat in hand. He's not always going to score runs. He's not always going to take wickets. But nobody will do any of those things. He's the best number six we've got and probably the best fifth bowler we've got. As it is, he's both of them roll into one. Yeah, he's a hell of a cricketer.
And I think we've probably spent enough time on Stokes. But Mike Atherton said on commentary that Stokes would be his first pick in that England side. So that's above Root, that's above Cook, that's above Anderson. Because of what he allows the rest... apparently so. Because of what he allows the rest of the side to be, because he performs that all-rounder role. And like South Africa would kill for a player like him, and every team in the world would kill for a player like him to have in their middle order.
How many more runs would he have had to have scored out for it to work?
I think he is 95% of the way there of making a complete tit of me. The other 5% is him doing something to demonstrate that it's not going to take another 15 innings for him to score 2.58. Because I think I just have different expectations to you. I accept he's not going to be callous and score 45 and bowl at 30. Mm. But I do think that what he's producing now, if he's producing that in 5 years at the same rate, that's not sufficient for a number six also bowls, regardless of the balance. I understand the balance argument. But it's an expectation.
I would say Man of the Match awards would be a better indicator for Ben Stokes. If he wins England three matches a year or four, however many, then that... Mm.
Yeah, man of the match combined with winning, absolutely.
Yeah.
Where do we stand on man of the match combined with drawing on a road? This is... Yeah.
But it wasn't. I mean, I think by the end, it was debatable whether it even was a road. They dropped so many catches. They could have had South Africa out much cheaper than that. Then we saw actually what happened to England in their second innings, that it looked relatively hard to bat on. Obviously, pressure taking its toll there.
Yeah,
but I absolutely take the consistency point. To move on to another man who did show some level of consistency, let's talk about Nick Compton.
Can we have a break first?
Why not?
Jazz. Compton, now there's a player.
there's a man you like. England just needed someone at three who is competent and we got Nick Compton.
That's great work. I tweeted after the Stokes innings, who are like other contributors to Stokes' wonderful innings, T20 cricket for the revolution in the entire approach, and Nick Compton. But Nick Compton was more a symbol, not maybe specifically for that innings.
No,
but I think the combination with Cook in seeing off the new ball,
it's
South Africa looked good. They had to deserve Stokes to put him in that position.
It's a luxury England used to have when Trott was at three and we'd see Pryor coming in when we had runs on the board and he could just play his own way. And we haven't had that for a long time. And if we're talking about the stats of Stokes and Moen and stuff, that's a good reason why. Now we've seen already with Compton, even though he hasn't got a huge score yet, he obviously got big runs in the, 85 at Durban. He's batted so much time that England are in a relatively comfortable position when those middle to lower order players come in.
Did you think there was an insight from the way that Swan was talking about Compton in the very first innings of the first test? There was an immediate dialogue coming out of Swan, which he actually apologised for on Twitter after he scored some runs, you know, about the pace of Compton. And I just wonder, he must have been taking that straight from 2013.
Yeah.
And so you got an insight at that moment as to what the discussion was at that time.
I think that the people in the dressing room who would have been saying that back then would have been Graham Swan. Cook wouldn't have said it, would he? Because he batted in a very, very similar way. Mm. Trott wouldn't have said it. He batted in a very, very similar way.
Yeah.
So maybe Peterson would say something like that. But Peterson's a bit of a fan of Compton, isn't he?
Well, they're meant to be mates, but it's always hard to...
I mean, that's
flexible, isn't it?
The way Compton played in the first innings and the way Swan complained and then ultimately reversed his decision is, I think, pure Swan. Like, you can see him back in 2013-12 complaining about Compton scoring slowly. And I would say I'm yet to be fully won over by Compton at three. I like the renewed stability. I'm not sure whether he should be at three. But it is true to say that when players play like Compton does, they put a certain pressure on themselves to score more runs. If you score 40 off 40 and get out, you've given it away in one way. If you score 20 off 100 and get out, you've given it away in another way, and it's a way that would probably annoy your teammates a bit more. So
and get the press on your on your back. It was interesting. I mean, the quote that really stood out in that first innings of Durban was Daryl Cullinan apparently put on Facebook that Compton was batting South Africa back into the game. I mean, that was when England had been 40 for three, finished that day in a strong position before the collapse on the second day. Obviously, we saw how the game ended up, and England could easily have been skittled for 120. Which would not only have seen them lose that test match, but would have had massive ramifications for the whole series.
Yeah.
And it's just, he's going to... I actually don't necessarily think he will have a massively long test career, even though I think he's exactly what England need, because there's always going to be a struggle for him, almost particularly when we're winning. So say we manage to win in South Africa, we come back and we have Sri Lanka and Pakistan home series, which we're expected to win, we're expected to score quickly on good batting pitches. Compton will continue to play the way that he plays, and that's when people will start to get on his back, and the press, and all it takes is a couple of low scores and he'll get a lot more criticism than someone who plays more expansively, like Moen Ali, for instance, who probably can get a few lower scores also position the batting order.
I've got a theory about Compton's value, which is not just seeing off a new ball, particularly if there's a collapse from one of the openers getting out, because we all know about the value of seeing off a new ball, but also I think first innings batting, and the first test is an example where you're finding a lot, as in Pakistan, that on the fifth day you get a kind of transformation. If you're getting into the fifth day and you're batting first, so you're mostly bowling on that fifth day, there's incredible value in being the people who are bowling on that day. And Compton can sort of get you there. It's not just seeing off the new ball, it's pushing your entire innings further into the game, because the more you play the game, the more likely you'll get a result at the end of it.
There is a certain feeling that, not to use a Formula One metaphor, I don't often do this, but here's a little like getting the test car out, or the car out when it's very rainy. When things aren't going well for England, you get Compton out, he takes things very slowly, everyone has to sort of slow down for a bit. As soon as things are going well again, fair weather, they'll get rid of him again. I think that's what
that's great. Sadly. Yeah, I like that.
I agree. I mean, he's a really good person to have in the team at the moment, and we have so many aggressive players now. It's good to have a little ice to their fire. And his technique is beautiful, almost. It's so textbook. It's unbelievable. It's just all so angular and kind of linear and odd and amazing. And he's nice to have him up there at the moment. But I agree with Joe. If we're at home in the summer coming and we're doing as well as we'd like to be doing, then a few slow scores from him and all of people, mm-hmm. you know, Bell might be scoring runs, Balance might be scoring county runs. Yeah. No, there might be pressure on him.
Do you think Trott used to get that criticism? Yeah. And he was when he was averaging like mid-50s for a while.
I don't recall Trott getting the criticism in test matches for rate of scoring.
He did when we were playing weaker opposition. He did, because no one wants to watch him bat. That's the brutal truth of it. Everyone wants to see Peterson or whoever's in number five. And Compton's going to have the same thing, that there's going to be people on Twitter, even in the commentary box, everyone just gets a bit bored and needs something to say. And unfortunately...
Well, I mean, Bayliss has said that he thinks two stroke makers in the top three is a better balance. So there's already... Cook's not going anywhere.
No, exactly.
I wonder what kind of message that sends. Compton's an interesting character. We go through his Twitter feed. Joe, I know you've been in touch with him. He's outspoken.
Mm.
He's obviously very focused, very determined, but that comes with also a self-confidence. He sort of knows what's best for him. Which might not have done him many favours back in. KP said basically as much about Compton. They're kind of allowing it for now, I get the impression. He had an absolute...
Also different environment to come into. Yeah. I mean, to be outspoken in that Andy Flower-led dressing room with those kind of big beasts of English cricket who'd been around for a long time is different to now, where I think it is a more... It sounds like a more open, democratic... Cook isn't... Bayliss basically lets Cook run the side, which I think Cook said he found almost alarming to start with. That wasn't the way Andy Flower obviously acted with him. Following on from that, Cook isn't a dominating figure in that sense, so it allows other people to have their voice as well. So that's not to say if Compton rubs people up the wrong way, then he's still not going to find himself Mr. Popular, but I think it is a different time and place.
I think there's probably a bit more respect for him in this dressing room as well than there was in the dressing room previously. They're younger players. They're players who will have played county cricket and seen Compton score a lot of runs.
That's very true.
In the olden days, with Peterson and Trott and whoever, they were players who weren't necessarily playing with Compton. They were scoring runs at test level, but he comes up and says whatever.
Yeah.
The younger lads, well, I think, will probably... They might think he's an odd bloke, maybe, I don't know. But they'll think he's a good player, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a Cook paradox at the moment, by the way. You know how he obviously from Essex, but he sometimes drips a little South African in there. I found since he's arrived in South Africa, he's got a bit more Essex.
That's very good, he's talking a bit like Phil Walker. is that what's going on? Is it actually Phil Walker who's been doing Alistair Cook's press conferences? He is out there. How's his stomach, guys? It's not holding up, is it?
It's not been good for a few days now. We haven't spoken to him today, but it's been a bit tricky. I'm not sure necessarily the listeners want all the details, but
that
hasn't stopped Phil telling us the details.
He probably didn't anticipate when he told you in a private setting that you would then prepare a podcast.
No, I think
including a section.
I would say that Phil's never one to be overly concerned with private becoming public.
Phil, we wish you well with your gastrointestinal difficulties.
Nice.
And enjoy Cape Town. Looks lovely. So, should we have a small break and talk about underrated cricketers?
Let's do that.
Little jazz, listener. Ross, you've got a really good underrated player. Don't blush, baby. Just tell us about it.
It's Chris Gayle. No, it's not. I'm going to go, I think purely because this is how complex a thinker I am. We were talking about a Mitchell. I'm going to talk about another Mitchell. Daryl Mitchell.
I knew it. I guessed it. I thought it was going to be either Daryl Mitchell or Chris Rushworth.
Or Rushworth is certainly very good too.
Anyway, Daryl.
But a quick one on Daryl Mitchell. Terrific player. Scores a hell of a lot of runs. Does incredible work for Worcestershire. Will never play for England. Probably never had a chance of doing so. And I think it's on that basis that you can really fall in love with a cricketer like that. Always doing it at his best at a certain level. Probably got the fantastic average, probably one of the best for people who played that amount of matches around in either division.
Top tier as well, in a struggling team.
Yeah, I've done well in the top tier in a struggling team. I also want to put a shout out for David Willey's batting, which I think is underrated in the England setup at the moment. Seems to bat about 10 at
times. It's crazy.
I think he's an absolutely
very, very few players he can bat above, though.
That is true.
I know what you mean, but loads of them.
Back in the day, you would allow someone that played that higher up just as because what does a pinch hitter matter? If he gets out for 20, doesn't really... It's more of a shame to see him coming in at 9, getting about 4 balls to try and hit out of the park. He never quite gets his iron, and then we never see him again. Mm. When he's one of the most destructive hitters in the country, I think. There we go. There's mine.
Underrated player for you, Henry.
It's Sir James of Treadwell, which will come as no surprise to anyone who's ever spent any time with me ever. Not only do I have a love for all things off-spin, I have a love for natural outsiders in life. And Treaders is one of them. You know, when the others are having cheeky Nando's, he's making a squash or a courgette chutney. And that says a lot about the man who has probably never really been fully at home in a dressing room. And I really, honestly, I'm not even joking, I really, really admire his difference-ness, if you
will. Have you ever interviewed him?
I have. It was lovely. He was a great man.
You've got stronger arguments than his chutneys, though. I've heard these.
He's also, I think, probably England's second best ever spinner in limited over behind Swan. But Swan was a bit of a freak in terms of Swan's one of our best ever in all talk time.
He's ignoring Illingworth.
Richard, his record's much better than Dickie's.
Treaders are terrific. Really, Treaders only really got knocked out of the attack and by Australia. I mean, it was
very rarely.
It's just a few moments that everyone remembers.
He's 19th on the list of England's all-time ODI bowlers. I do speak specifically about ODI cricket. I don't think he has enough aggression as a bowler. He's not good at getting you out. You need to get yourself out. But there's a real skill in that. There is a real skill in that. Only three people have got a better ODI strike rate than him with the ball.
Who are they?
Broad, Anderson and Finn, funny enough.
That's a whole different topic which we've got to come back to on another show, which is the future of Broad and Anderson in the ODI setup. But we can part that for now because it's not a pressing issue. Listener, just in case you're wondering why the hell we're talking about underrated players, there's another issue of the magazine coming out. With regularity, it tends to happen.
True. Not for a while, though. This one isn't coming out until the first week of February. So don't get... Just hold your horses.
Wow.
We're doing a big feature on the most underrated cricketers. Not just contemporary, old guys as well. And we've got a few people from cricket, so Sangakkara has given us one, Jai Warden has given us one, Jason Gillespie's given us one, and we've written some of our own. So this is a kind of a tee up for that, really.
So pitch your tents in front of WH Smith, listener, because it'll be out in early February.
Or Joe or McCall.
And tell us on Twitter if you've got some suggestions in the meantime.
That's an electronic digital platform.
@Joe Cricket.
Do you want to tell us your underrated cricketer?
I'm going to go from one rotund man of Kent to another and go with Mark Elam, who I grew up watching a lot of. I grew up just a few minutes down the road from St Lawrence Ground in Canterbury. He was an excellent all-rounder for Kent for many years, across all formats. He's predominantly known as a one-day player by fans of English cricket. Mm. But for Kent, he would get 800 runs most years, get 30, 40 wickets at not very many. And he was a brilliant fielder for a guy who looked like a bit of a kind of fat village cricketer for much of his career. He could whack it a long way, and he was a very economical bowler. I mean, he's got one of the best economy rates of any English bowler.
Never went for a run, did he? Never once.
No,
in his whole career, zero runs he went for.
Doesn't get enough credit for that. No runs.
Didn't go for. No one ever hit him.
And there's always a place for someone who doesn't ever go for a run in a one day side as well.
He was a big fan of Mark Elam. I mean, what can you know? He's just fantastic. That's the sort of cricketer you need to balance a cricket team.
Would you rather have Mark Elam than Ben Stokes in his pomp
in the England cricket team?
Yeah, as a more level, it will give you some numbers.
Yeah, it'll average out nicely.
Yeah,
yeah. I haven't looked at the Elam numbers, but I suspect I'd be underwhelmed. I'm not sure I want Elam as the classic example of what I would otherwise get.
Mark Elaine.
Dermot
Reeve.
Chris Lewis.
You're talking about underrated players. I was going to have a go at Dermot Reeve just for ODI inventiveness. Mm. But no, I've settled on a guy who... I mean, you guys have talked with affection about your choices. I have no real affection for this guy. I'm trying to pick a guy who I genuinely think is utterly underrated. For most of my life, the England cricket team were abominable. And then suddenly, when I turned 18... they managed to beat the West Indies at home, and they were suddenly all right. And obviously, later on under Duncan Fletcher, they become better and better. But we're talking the very beginning, the stirring, the phoenix from the ashes. And for a very short period of time, that bowling team was assisted by Craig White.
Craig White?
Yeah, who, for a very, very short period of time, swung the ball at around 90 miles an hour off about a three-step run-up and sort of bished it around a bit at the back. And they played him and Cork and Caddick and Gough, and they all looked sort of mildly competent, and England won some test matches. Craig White is a player who I don't think anybody really feels wrong about. I mean, he's an outsider. He was Aussie originally, so it's all part of that sort of McCaig line of players leading into Caddick.
McCaig lineage.
Yeah. but he's my choice. Just before I leave this entire section, we touched upon something that was beautiful. That's what's not really there in international cricket at the moment. If you're thinking about diversity, the guy who goes for almost nothing, even now in ODI cricket now, I can't think of the person who does that.
I've got one for you.
Go for it.
Alex Hales, 0.43 economy rate.
There we go.
Wonderful.
Great player, Craig White. What a great segment.
That's the end of another show. Thanks for sticking with us through the winter. We were last around the place on December the 1st, and now it's obviously early January. We'll be back after the last two test matches against South Africa. We're going to cruise out on a little controversial point at the moment. Chris Rogers said about his future teammate at Somerset, Chris Gayle, he says it's just a joke. Well, it's not a joke, is it?
That's one of my favourite things.
I do like Chris Rogers.
Yeah, he is great.
Chris Gayle has apparently installed a stripper's pole inside his house, according to The Telegraph. Has anyone watched the clip of him being sexist?
Yes.
It is great.
So, thoughts on that, gentlemen?
I like his suggestion that it was a joke. I don't know what the punchline is. I don't know how it fits into the cat. You wouldn't, you know.
It's not a natural setup at a comedy gig.
I'm not sure what the next one. It's not going to be in, you know, Brucey's joke book.
No.
And I like the idea of people say things. And there was jokes you used to make when you wanted to go to a party when you were a child. You go, oh, can I come? You actually do want to come. It's no joke. Yeah. he wasn't saying that she was an ugly woman. He was saying, I actually would really like to take you out and get you on my stripper's pole. It was a horrible moment.
It's not going to be in Tuffers' book of cricket wit 2016 stocking filler, is it? Because it doesn't have a punchline, Chris. You've got to work through the structure of a joke and give it some thought.
Well, no, the punchline is the patriarchal system we all live in, which, as punchlines go, isn't brilliant.
It's a downer.
Yeah.
I was perturbed not only by the content of what he said, but I'd never really heard him speak before in the abnormally high voice and the absence of eye contact. Call me a traditionalist. Yeah. When asking a girl out, I do tend to look at them at the time of doing it.
But it's joking.
Oh, so he was didn't joke.
That was the joke, but he wasn't looking in the eye.
Sexist joke.
Oh, yeah. That's good. That's a good one.
All right, well, cricket will move on.
I guess.
Cricket Maybe will be there won't. Tomorrow and the day after and the day after. Chris Gayle may not be. All sorts of allegations coming out of the woodwork now. So it could get a bit messy. Watch this space, although I would advise, if you do want to watch this space for latest developments, maybe broaden your media input from the Pop Blast, because we might not be back for a while. Check out the internet, check out the newspapers.
Yeah, look at other stuff. We're not saying we don't have a monopoly on you. Don't ever feel like we do.
Yeah. Okay, so thanks for listening.
Yeah.
Listener, you can contact us if you want. There's a Twitter address, at All Out Cricket.
That's the one.
Yeah. There's at Cricket Pop Blast.
Yeah.
So you can use those addresses for tweeting us.
But again, you can look up on the internet whatever you want. You're not our slaves. You be free. You do what you want to do.
If you're starting Nets, Henry, I know you are. Good luck.
Yes, thank you.
And enjoy the last couple of test matches. I'm hoping for a Chris Jordan recall.